This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Hello, my fabulous cat-loving friends. We are so excited. We got double trouble today. We have Dr. Rachel Geller here. She is one of our favoriteest humans in the whole wide world. She is an amazing behaviorist who does so much for so many. And joining her today is Daniel Thistle, who is a vet tech. I am so excited. We're going to talk to them as soon as we hear from this word from our sponsor.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to 19 Cats and Counting. I am your co-host, Linda Hall, here with the ever-gorgeous, newly recovered from COVID, Rita Reimers, looking good, babe.
It feels good to be back from the brink of COVID. It was horrible. See, I have Brenda Vaccaro voice going on. Those of you who are young don't know who that is. Look
it's
it up.
Sexy, baby.
But enough about
me. We love Dr. Rachel, and I am so excited. We have a vet tech, so we need to bring them on. But I need to say first, everybody listen to me. Vet techs are the nurses of the veterinary world.
They are.
They're not some assistant that was hired to just do silly things. And they get all the crap. Literally, there's probably crap on their coat.
Yeah, who's the one that sticks a thermometer up the bum? It's not the doctor.
Right? Right? You don't see the doctors giving injections to the mean cat. You don't see the doctor. Not to bash our vets. We love our vets.
We do.
To make the most use of them, we have our vet techs. And as we know, nurses are on the front line of the medical world. Our vet techs are the front line of the veterinary
world. Vet techs are nurses.
World. So thank your vet tech and be a little nicer to them. Jeez, they get all the crap. Okay.
They're the ones that get the gifts at Christmas when I send candy and stuff. I love Dr. Glenn, but the vet techs, they're the ones.
Be nice to the front as well.
Yes. Oh, yes, definitely.
You're right.
Be nice to
to everyone.
Just be nice, doggone it.
Just be nice.
Be nice.
No hissies, no poofy tails.
They're all, exactly. They're all here to help you. So we're going to talk about medical versus behavior issues. They can look identical, right? So what is our number one? Either of you tell me, what is our number one that we see this most often where we're like, it could be behavioral, could be medical?
Well, I'm going to take this one because by far, hands down, the most common question I get asked or concern that is brought to me has to do with that litter box. I mean, you would just think, how complicated can that plastic box with some sandy stuff in there be? But it's a huge big deal to our cats. And litter box issues are a big part of what I do. I'm sure Rita and Linda, it's a huge part of what do. And I know Dan looks at the medical piece of that. So let's jump in. Let's jump in the litter box first.
Yeah, so that's the issue that makes people say, I got to get rid of this cat because it's hard to, I don't want to live with litter box issues.
Nobody wants to live with pee and poop all over the house. Exactly.
Right.
So, Dr. Rachel, let's hit the behavior. What could this be behaviorally?
So behaviorally, there's so much that goes into it. But bullet points, cats feel extremely vulnerable in their litter boxes. So they always want to be sure to have a clear, clean field of vision. They want clear sight lines all the way around them. They want to know that should an opponent appear, and these opponents can be real or imagined, that they have the opportunity for escape. So potential for escape, ample visual warning time, clear visual field. These are all things that are super important to a cat. So a lot of us tend to put a litter box in a corner or under something. and this could be affecting your cat's litter box use. Number of boxes is important as well. My rule is always one more box than the number of cats that you have, but you may need more than that. You know, if you have a cat who feels threatened or intimidated, that cat may need another box in another location. The size of the box, the height of the sides, whether the box is covered or uncovered, the type of litter, maybe it's too perfumey for the cat. You know, cats want a litter, right, that has a soft, sandy, unscented smell to it. That's not the right way to say it, but you guys get what I'm saying. You know, the last time I checked outside.
A lack of scent.
Lack of scent. There you go.
Thank you, Dan. Yeah. The last time I checked outside, the soil was not perfumed or have additives in it. So we want to replicate that as much as possible. So choosing the right box and making sure it's safe and making sure it meets your cat's needs is a huge, big deal in your cat's world.
I love the phrase. One of the key phrases you said, real or imagined threats, right?
Yes.
People, there's nobody's bothering her by the litter. No, but she may be smelling other cats outside or something else is making her skeptical to get in the box because she thinks she's going to get it. When she gets in the box, somebody's going to get her, right?
Yes, yes. Cats really don't want to be ambushed in that box. And it is an instinct of theirs because they are both predator and prey. So they want to make sure they're safe. And when they're in that pooping position or that peeing position, these are very technical terms, by the way. I studied a lot to learn all of this. You know, they feel vulnerable. They know they can be easily attacked or ambushed. And so it's a little bit of a stress. I mean, when we go to the bathroom, we don't think about, okay, how am I going to escape? But your cat does.
Yes.
But if exactly. I was going to the bathroom, that is exactly not when I want the boogeyman to break in because I can't run with my pants at my ankles. So I'm kind of feeling on them.
So it's even scarier. Yeah.
Exactly. So I understand. So Dan, what medical issues could cause this and why?
So certain things like, urinary tract infections or other things that cause, you know, urinary issues like feline lower urinary tract disease or fluted, as you'll hear people call it. That's one where it's just kind of inflammation down there that no one's really entirely sure exactly why that's happening, but it happens in some of the cats, you know. And so there's things that can be done to help with that. But if they start associating the pain of one of those inflammatory issues with being in that box, then they're going to, you know, start saying, I don't really want to be in there. Or if it increases their urgency of how frequently they need to pee, they might not be able to make it, you know, to the box when all of a sudden the urge hits and they need to pee, they're get up out of their cat tree and, I don't think I can make it all the way there. Let me pee on this rug instead. Let me pee, you know, I was sleeping on the bed. Now I've peed on the bed. They weren't doing it because they were mad at you. They may have been doing it because they were.
Thank you for saying that. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
They were having an issue.
I hear that all the time. You know, my cat peed on my bed because she was mad at me, or my cat peed on my shoes to teach me a lesson, or my cat peed on my socks because she doesn't like my new boyfriend. Although that one could be true.
That one could be true.
Character.
But it's still not to teach you a lesson, right? It's to claim you because I'm nervous about this predator in the situation.
Yes. So, in all seriousness, you know, cats want their needs met. And if your cat is using the litter box, it's because it meets her needs in terms of location and safety and security and box size and box type. And if the same cat is not using the litter box, she is not in any way misbehaving. She does not think about right or wrong the way we do. She has some problem in her life, and she is trying to solve that problem as a cat.
And I think some of it too, Dr. Geller, correct me if I'm wrong, when they're sick, I think they're instinctually, they want to do their business away from where the clowder does it because they don't want to spread their illness. Would you say that's
true? Absolutely. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. You know, they have all of these instincts that guide their behavior, you know, to meet their needs and to stay safe. So yes, they don't want the rest of the cats to get sick. And also they know they don't feel as well. They know they're not moving as quickly. They know they're in pain. And so they also don't want predators to know where they are. So there's all kinds of instincts that come into play.
Every time my Kismet has an FIV flare up, he hides behind the toilet. If you can't find Kismet, he's flaring and we need to get on it. And Dan, isn't it true that stress can cause some of these inflammations? So it can be like
That six idiopathic.
Six to one half dozen of the others, my father would say.
Stress can definitely exacerbate those things. So often I have a lot of, you know, pet owners that call up and they're like, hey, my looted cat, you know, we just had movers start doing construction, or, you know, we just had construction start in the area. Now they're peeing outside the box. I think that it's the beginning of their UTI that they always get. You know? And so if it's a chronic case, every now and then a vet might, you know, prescribe antibiotics without something, you know, like an exam. But more often than not, they're still going to want to see them because stress can cause other issues as well, not just the urinary thing.
Right, right.
And then I also wanted to comment on it before I forgot. I remember Dr. Rachel talking about the height of the litter box. And that can be really important as your cat ages as well, because as they're aging and, you know, getting arthritis and things, they can't step into that tall box anymore. So sometimes people are like, my cat, this has been the litter box they've been using their whole life. Well, yeah.
What about those top loaders, Stan?
You just took that out of my head.
And they expect the cat to jump down in and then jump up out. No.
Right. They're older. They may be arthritic. They may be overweight. Yeah. And they're just not as agile as they were when they were kittens. And I kind of think of any human who moves the same way and uses the same items as they did when they were toddlers. But yet that we put that expectation on our cats. And Dan is correct. As they age, their litter box needs definitely change.
Definitely.
And every cat's different. Every cat has their own personal preference on what it likes. And that might change over time, but just like with us.
Very good point.
My three-legged Smoochie, she used to be pretty agile even with the missing leg. But now that she's older, she's not so much. So I had to get one of those really low senior type boxes. Otherwise, yep, She'll go right next to it because she can't exactly haul herself into it anymore.
Right. You know, Rita, I've even had some clients where I've suggested that they just use a plastic boot tray or a cookie sheet as a litter box.
Nice. That's a good idea.
Yeah, because even the little size were too much for some cats. Yeah.
And they make ones like that we use for, you know, when I've worked with shelters and things like that, they make little flat litter boxes that are, you know, they're pretty much, as she said, a cookie cutter tray or like lunch tray from the cafeteria, you know. Yeah,
good idea. You know, there's a couple other issues I've seen. My parents used to winter in Florida, and I got a phone call one day and my mother said, I'm really worried your dad's about had it. This cat started peeing on our bed. And they're staying in a mobile home community with all the other old people. So, you know, they have to go to the laundromat. So everybody wants to go to get into bed and find their sheet soap. So I said, okay, first, when did you last go to the vet? Well, it had been a couple months. I said, okay, well, that's going to need to be. But have you changed litter recently? They adopted a cat who was front clawed. And my dad switched, poor man, he's like 84, and he switched to something that was lighter to carrier, and it hurt her paws. She wasn't having it. So she peed on the bed, you know? So that substrate, all the things for comfort,
and
right?
And why up on the bed? It's up high.
Elevation, right. Elevation, safety, going back to that clear visual field, ample, you know, potential to escape. I mean, we certainly don't love the thought of our cat peeing on the bed, but from the cat's perspective, it really solves a lot of problems.
It does.
She's feeling, you know, and decluttered cats are always feeling stressed about protecting themselves. So, you know, you take a normal cat whose instinct is already to protect himself from opponents and predators and even other cats who may be rougher or tougher than he is, that's heightened in a cat who's declawed.
Dan, do you think declawed cats have problems with ghost pains afterward?
Yeah, and it's definitely something that's been, you know, talked about a lot in the vet industry, and that's why most places nowadays will not declaw. I'm really happy to say that I work for, you know, I work for a company that has decided not to declaw. They made it a directive. It's really great. If I go to a hospital nowadays, I do relief work, so I jump around hospital to hospital. But if I go to a hospital, and luckily I haven't gone to one yet that does, you know, declaws anymore, things like that. But if I were to go to one, I don't think that I would be going back since I have the choice.
I've been dying to ask that. I had told Rita, because she's got her three-legged cat, and bad weather, Smoochie tends to do things that we don't like as much. And I have had a diabetic son-in-law who had to have his toes amputated all the way down years ago from diabetes. And he had horrendous ghost pains. And this was a very strong, typical tough dude, doesn't complain. You'd see this look on his face and he'd say, my toes are burning, and the toes that don't exist. And I was like, Rita, I wonder if Smoochie's feeling that.
I think so. I think she is. Because even if I touch where her leg, you know, where the joint is, where the leg used to be, sometimes she's okay with it. And sometimes she winces a little bit.
Yeah, and all of that pain definitely affects behavior. So it really can all be intertwined.
She's my only cat that barks, by the way. She's very strange. She's a strange
cat. It's interesting, too, about cats with amputations. Because some, you know, it really affects them. And you can tell they need to get used to it. And other cats are like, oh, I don't have a leg anymore. When's lunch?
It's
like,
well, exactly.
Smoochie's like that most of the time. But as she's gotten older, she's about 8 or 9 now. I've lost track. I do notice she gets grumpier more. And she's got less patience with some of the other kitties as well.
That happens with us, too.
Of course. I know that if you have, for example, a human breaks their ankle, it's more likely that they'll get arthritis in that area. Is that something that is common to happen in cats, Dan?
Yeah, it definitely is. And it's something that has also been talked about, you know, a lot in the field. And so we're luckily, not that it's ever luckily towards the ends of cats' lives or anything like that, but we're luckily towards the end of seeing those cats coming into the hospital, because it's been almost 20 years since some of these places have been making these directives, which is really nice. Not everyone has. Sometimes, like, you know, catch up with the times. But
exactly.
It's really great. We're not seeing as many cats coming in that it's like, oh, they were declawed as a kitten or things like
that. So now they're going to have problems. And what an awful place.
Yeah, I have one declawed.
Literally walking on this, right?
Sakura came to us declawed.
Oh, that's right. I was like, ooh. Oh, yeah, I knew that.
Sakura's cool. It's a cool cat.
There's 30 of them all together. I can't keep tabs.
We have to take a little break right here at that 30 number. Yes, I am back to 19 cats and counting. Almost was 20 today, but I just had to say no. I just can't take in anymore. But anyway, we'll be right back after this break, and we'll talk more about behavior versus medical issues in cats. We'll be right back.
Molly, here's your dinner. Zeus, that's not your food.
Don't let that happen to your precious cat. Elevate your cat's eating experience with the Cat Tree Tray. The Cat Tree Tray keeps your cat's food off the floor and conveniently located on the cat tree. It's the perfect way to eat. It's a beautiful wrought iron tray that easily attaches to your cat tree and keeps dogs and other critters out of your cat's dish. A must for multi-pet households. There's a 6-inch tray for large bowls and a 4-inch tray for smaller bowls. Purchase your Cat Tree Tray today. Go right now to cattreetray.com. That's cattreetray.com. cattreetray.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
And we're back with 19 Cats and Counting and my awesome BFF, Ride or Die, Linda Hall, the possum, Rachel Geller, who right now, if you go to Amazon and buy her book, she's doing a fundraiser. All proceeds go directly to our Carolina Cat Sanctuary. And Dan, the possum, vet tech, who takes care of Dr. Rachel's own cats, by the way. And we're talking about behavioral issues versus medical issues that are causing behavior problems and where the line intersects, because sometimes there is an intersect.
Yes. So I think we covered the litter box issues. What else, Dr. Rachel, comes to mind that could go either way?
Well, I think the other thing that I see a lot is cats who are acting aggressively. And somebody will say to me, out of nowhere, you know, for no reason, my cat.
It's never out of nowhere. It's never no reason, right?
There's always a reason. But when there's a behavior change, it's very abrupt. Usually, chances are that cat may be experiencing some type of pain or there's something going on. And there is a phenomenon known as pain-induced aggression. And cats can't get to the source of what's bothering them. They don't understand. And so they take it out on whoever's nearby. And usually that's a human or a companion cat in the household.
So behaviorally, this could be, I'm still scared of that cat, whatever, but medically, it could be a pain issue. What kind of pain issues do you see often that people are missing out on like that? That, oh, there's something behind this, Dan.
Yeah, I'd say the two most common kind of pain things that we see are, you know, underdiagnosed pain in cats, because cats are so good at hiding their pain that you don't really know, and they don't tell you until it's a lot of pain. But the two would most likely be dental pain and then arthritis, osteoarthritis in cats, because all of those things are going to affect their normal day-to-day habits. And chronic daily pain, even in people, just makes you tense,
cranky,
makes you stress, makes
mean.
You lash out a little bit more. And I've seen so many cats that come in for their dental procedure that the owners are like, oh, you know, my cat's been doing this and that, you know, they've been kind of not wanting me to pet them anymore. They swat at me sometimes when I'm trying to just scratch their head, which is where I always scratch, or under their chin. And little do they know there's, you know, a little tooth root abscess down here or something along that lines, you know, causing some pain. The resorptive lesions in cats is really common, which is where their tooth root is literally just eating away at itself.
I see a lot of cats don't get regular routine vet visits. So those pain issues in the mouth, the teeth, that festers for quite a while. And often cats end up having their teeth removed because they haven't had that regular care. Is that right?
Yep, that's very right. And a lot of people get, you know, concerned that their cat's teeth need to be removed. And I've met plenty of cats where, especially where, you know, as a kitten, if they have like stomatitis from having like Khaleesi virus or something as a kitten, we've done full mouth extractions when they've been under a year old and they live normal, happy lives. They just, a lot of cats don't even actually chew their food unless it's too big for them.
Yeah, they'll tend to inhale it. Yes.
Your FIV cat, what has he got? Like one tooth left?
Stomatitis. Yeah, I think he's got like two teeth left, which actually really irritated me because he had dental surgery and he had a bunch of teeth removed. And then I brought him in for scaling and polishing and they said, we need to take out more teeth. He's got like two or three teeth left.
Just,
and I'm like, why
them.
In the world? Why? What good are those two teeth doing? Just so we do give him some extra wet food because my cats get two wet food meals a day and then they get a little dry during the day. Don't tell anybody. And so Kismet, yeah, he doesn't see. I have caught him once in a while picking at the dry food, but he can't eat much of it. So he gets a third wet meal every day. But, you know, yeah, it hasn't really caused problems. Sometimes his lip gets stuck on his gum and he looks like Elvis.
Elvis.
Thank you very much. It's really cute. But no actual problems. So just get rid of them.
And they feel so much better, you know, when their teeth are diseased and that pain. And then, as Dan said, you know, they're just feeling pain all the time. And so when you're up to here all the time in pain, the least little thing, even if it's something that we think is pleasurable, can really put that cat over the edge. So, you know, we remove that pain.
If anybody out there has never had a toothache, God bless you. Like, you want to stay home and go to bed, but it's not really something lovable, right? It's that bad of a
You were down here
constant.
With a toothache. I remember that visit.
Yes.
It was
I had
not
just
a fun
had
visit
one removed
you.
And it was hurting. And yeah, I was miserable. So yes. If they do not get the teeth removed, Dan, other than pain, can this lead to other medical issues? These infected?
Yeah, there's a lot of things out there indicating, you know, just like with people, when you're sitting there at the dentist and, you know, they have their screen telling you all about how it'll affect your heart, it'll affect all of these other, you know, organs as well. Even just aspirating that bacteria, you know, if your mouth is full of bacteria and you're breathing through that bacteria, what happens when you accidentally, you know, you say, oh, that my spit went down the wrong hole. Well, what happens when that spit is full of bacteria, you know?
Right. Yeah. Isn't it true that in people that that can cause heart disease? Is that, if I'm remembering that right, is that the same with cats if they don't have those?
Yeah, it is, because the bacteria gets into the bloodstream as well. And even from something like aspirating or whatnot, you just have a constant source of infection in the mouth. So that's going to be bacteria and blood kind of able to mix right there, which is never a good thing.
And they're probably not eating well. And yeah. Oh,
I do mean too. I wouldn't want another, if I was a cat, I wouldn't want another cat bothering me.
The cats can still be eating well, even with this dental disease, because as Rachel was mentioning earlier, the cats, they don't want to show pain. They don't want to be, you know, seen as weak. So
vulnerable.
The cats are often still going and eating, and people are like, I'm going to push off the dental procedure. You know, the vet recommended that there might be extractions, but I'm going to push it off because the cat's still doing great.
Cats
did fine. You want to just say, wait a minute, let me smack you in the mouth and see if you feel like eating.
Emergencies are way worse than just regular dental pain.
Good point. Yeah, let it go. Yes. Go ahead. Pay that bill and see how that goes as we fight to save your cat's life. Go ahead. Save that money.
No. What about neurological issues in cats and behavior?
Right under the eyeballs as well.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Like when they do get an abscess under the root, it can affect their eyes. It can affect their sinuses because they have such tiny, cute little noses. And where's their, you know, the teeth roots are right next to that too.
Oh, and especially if you're talking about a Persian with a flat nose.
Yeah, the smushy. Yeah.
Well, what about neurological issues? We don't see a lot of that, but I've had cats with neurological issues and it often does affect behavior sometimes to the aggressive side. Are there good treatments for cats that have some neurological issues for keeping them calmer and helping them get along with other cats in the household?
There are medications that, you know, some vets will use if you're talking about, you know, anxiety or things like that. Depending on the type of neurologic issue, you know, it'll all depend. You know, if it's something like a brain tumor, then that's something that might require radiation or something like that, you know, some bigger therapy. But if it's just more of like a anxiety type neurologic issue, then often that can be helped with medications if the other, you know, other tips and tricks that this is where I would definitely try and work hand in hand with behaviorists like you.
Right.
Know, like Dr. Uchil.
Right. Because you're never, even if you've determined that your cat has anxiety, and I just want to say that I have no problem giving a cat anti-anxiety medication. I think we are so fortunate that we live in a time that we've discovered that this helps not only people, but our cats. And if a person was struggling with mental health issues or anxiety, we would not hesitate to suggest medication if we thought that that would be helpful for that person. They feel the same way with our cats. But having said that, you are never going to give a cat a pill and the behavior problem is going to go away and be immediately resolved. The medication will resolve that emotional piece, that anxiety piece for the cat, but you still need to follow the behavior plan that has been written out for your cat.
Absolutely. Exactly. And it seems like all vets want to go right to Prozac, which I don't know if that's always the best choice, but it seems Prozac and Feel-Aware are the two things vets seem to go right to. Why is that? Why Prozac, Dan?
It's just, there aren't very many things, unfortunately, that have been studied with the cats, you know, so that's one that has been used for quite a while. So there's a lot of anecdotal evidence, you know, that's shared around through the industry, and it works really well. They have such sensitive kidneys and livers that they can't really handle some of those other bigger drugs for long-term use because, you know, I always tell people cats are aliens, you know, they were put on, and I love them so much. I've also said I'm glad we're in the timeline that cats are, you know, our friends.
I know. I had a vet years ago that told me, you're learning all these things in medical school, and it goes, this goes for all animals except cats. Because cats are so different.
Yes, that's true. When I was in pharmacology class, almost there were so many drugs that we had to learn, I would never be able to list them all. But there were so many things that in the contraindication column, cats.
That's why we love them,
so,
though.
My problem, and I want to get both your takes on this, my problem with, let's say, Prozac, it can take up to 8 weeks to build up in your system. So you're going to wait 2 months and then you're going to say, oh, it's really not doing it now. We need to play with it, blah, blah, blah. Okay, this isn't the right medication. Now we have to titrate off. And so often it's a temporary issue. I'm mad because you brought a new cat in and I'm scared to death of them. There are feral cells, whatever, that I'm not playing around with a drug for 3 months when I tackle it this
way. No, they would end up surrendering the cat long before they even titrated all the way up.
Well, I think that's a good point.
I don't know how often I give out Rachel's website because I'm like, hey, you know, while we're doing this, you should email Dr. Rachel because she does free consults. She just wants you to keep your cat in your home. Please email her.
I'm happy you do that. And I'm happy to help. And to Linda's point, I do think those types of medications are really only good if it's been diagnosed as a chronic anxiety problem, an ongoing kind of constitutional issue with the cat. You know, this cat does have diagnosed anxiety rather than we can pinpoint there's a new baby, there's been a change, you know, that type of thing. Absolutely.
Yeah. And some people use certain things for, you know, just for stressful events. Like, if you don't mind me sharing, Dr. Rachel.
Yes, please.
You know, like one of Dr. Rachel's cats, you know, comes in for some sanitary shaves and some nail trims, and she doesn't like it. You know, the cat doesn't like it. And I don't take offense that she doesn't love to come see me. But she needs a little bit of gabapentin on board. And it works wonders.
We love GABA. We love GABA for those short-term.
Really wrap her in a little burrito, and then I can do most of it on my own normally, which is great.
Yeah,
we do talk about.
She is a lovely cat, but she does turn into Cujo when it's time to go see Dan.
Scary, exactly.
I'm very lucky. I don't have any current Cujo cats. I have had them in the past, but most of my cats really love my vet and love the vet techs because they get treated extra special and they give them little treats and things.
And gabapentin is very easily compounded. You don't need to, you know, pill the cat. You can get it compounded into a tasty treat. So, for people who are afraid, you know, oh, I could never do that. I can't pill my cat. You know, you can get it compounded. There are some compounders that offer menus that have so many delicious combinations of food that sometimes I'm tempted to order it for myself. I mean, like chicken and chicken and turkey fricassee and all of these delightful sounding.
Right. It comes in vanilla marshmallow. Like there's
right.
I love it.
There's a transdermal option where you can just rub the medication on your
cat's ear. That's my favorite.
You know, so there are so many options. So if you're out there and you're listening and you think, you know, oh, I can't pill my cat, talk to your vet because there are many, many options available.
I'm so glad you said that because we just had somebody like last week that was like, well, they put her on blah, blah, blah. How's it going? Are you seeing any improvement? I can't give that cat that pill. And now the cat hates me and the cat is running from me and we've got a horrible relationship. And I said, forget it.
It was the GABA. And remember, I sent them the link to show your vet that you can get that in a transdermal.
And you know, a lot of cats can detect it in the food too, you know, and then forget it, you know, once they get that taste.
My 19-year-old Missy, as old as she is and as much as her sniffer is off, if I put anything in her food like that, she knows it.
They do. They sniff it and they walk away. Yes.
Well, I like gabapentin because you don't have to titrate up and titrate down. It's just,
exactly.
I told somebody the other day, it's like a Tylenol. Take it. It does its job. It goes, right?
Yeah.
My parents used GABA on their cat to go to Florida and back every year. So yeah, 4 days a year, Jazzy was on GABA.
We need to unfortunately wrap. I hate it because we could probably talk about this for another hour. But are there any last thoughts, Dr. Rachel and Dan, that you would like to leave our listeners with?
I would just say that if you are having a cat behavior problem, you know, use your best judgment on whether to rule out medical first. You know, if you can identify a trigger or a change or a stressor in your cat's environment, look at that first because you definitely don't want to stress out your cat even more with an unnecessary veterinarian trip. But by the same token, if the behavior change is abrupt, if it's sudden, if nothing seems to be helping and maybe it's even getting worse, then it's definitely time to bring your cat in to see your vet.
So right. And Dan, any last words for us?
Just want to thank you guys for having me on. But yeah, I would agree that I like just working hand in hand with you guys, you know, behaviorists and veterinarians to try and help keep all the cats where they should be, happy and healthy.
Linda and I always say it takes a village.
It does. Yes, exactly.
Well, I would like to thank you both for being on our show, and I hope you come back because I know there's even more we could talk about together. Linda, my best friend forever and ever, who makes everything possible because she's just so wonderful and sparkly, and she's got all those qualities I don't have because I'm shy. Yes, I'm shy. And of course, I'd be remiss if I didn't thank Mark Winter for giving us this awesome spot on Pet Life Radio. We are forever in your debt. And just remember, everyone, every day is Catter Day, and we'll see you next time.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.